So continuing now with Swadhyaya of the Panchanga Puja. Next is Shastra Seva, or service to the scriptures. So service to the scriptures consists of worshipping, studying, hearing, reciting, and preaching the scriptures' message. Definition and necessity of following Shastra. Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatyayaiva Kalpate. Devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. Worshipping Shastra. In a lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, Brahma Samhita was not available, but when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring in South India, he collected one Brahma Samhita, handwritten on palm leaves, and copied it. Formerly, there was no press. These important shastras, Vedic literature, were kept in handwriting. I copy from your book, my friend copies from my book. In this way, those who were interested. These literatures were not so cheap. Only highly qualified brahmanas, they used to keep handwritten copies. And it was worshipped in the temple as deity. Not that it was available everywhere. Now press has made it much cheaper. But we should always understand that granthas, or scriptures, should be worshipped as God. That is sound incarnation of God. This should not be neglected. Bhagavatam or Gita as ordinary books. As you take care of the deities, you should take care of the books also. Lecture by Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam, 3/25/37, 6 December 1974 in Bombay. When reading and lecturing, keep any shastra you read above the level of your seat, on a proper stand. You may cover the stand by a silk, jari-boarded cloth to show some respect to the shastra. So the idea is that the book should always be in a better position than we are. We don't keep it on the same mat that we're sitting on. There has to be some difference between the book and us. Like that. There must be something. You know, whatever it is, simple. A little stand, some cloth, something. But there must be some difference like that. It can't just be that we just put it on the same places where we're standing. Some devotee mentioned that. Prabhupada said, why are you keeping it on the floor? He says, no, it's on the mat that I'm sitting on. But Prabhupada says that you'll stand on that mat. So you'll put your feet on the mat. So that means it's, you know, that's as good as a floor. So there should always be some difference. Studying the Shastra. In the Bhagavad Gita 6:24, Lord Krishna says, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. What happened to the kids? And Srila Prabhupada writes in his letters, regarding my books, everyone should read. I am also reading. Everyone should be engaged 24 hours. That is the sum and substance. How much you should read and how much you should do other types of service, that has to be decided by each individual devotee. Eating and sleeping should be minimized. Not a single moment should be misused. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 15th February 1975. Another quote, your first job should be to make sure that every one of the devotees in your zone of management is reading regularly our literature and discussing the subject matter seriously from different angles of seeing, and that they are somehow or another absorbing the knowledge of Krishna conscious philosophy. They are fully educated in our philosophy, and if they can get all of the knowledge and study it from every viewpoint, then very easily they will perform tapasya or renunciation. and that will be their advancement in Krishna consciousness. So we see here is that the shastras, they are telling us what to do, and then the guru and the sadhus, they are also telling us what to do. But that is in line with the shastra. Therefore, guru, sadhu, shastra. It's not that the shastras have to say what the guru says. The guru is saying what the shastra says. Right? So this is the point. So the guru and the sadhu then are checked against the shastra. And if it's an unknown shastra, of course, then we check it against what the guru says. Because guru is speaking according to Bhagavatam and Gita, which are like the essence of all the Vedic literatures. So if they carry that proper mood, carry that proper understanding, then we will read those literatures. And if not, then we will leave those literatures. In other words, the literatures are written from many angles of vision, for many different kinds of persons. As Prabhupada says, one should study from many kinds of vision, the angles of vision. But that must be according to the different viewpoints that are there, how we accept them. Or if it's an opposing viewpoint, then it should be dealt with how we oppose it. We have to be very, very careful. Because if we don't know, then we will accept things that should not be accepted. Or we will reject things that shouldn't be. So our life is regulated by the scriptures. The spiritual master gives us direction according to the scriptures. This is the point. So Krishna expects that we will learn what is duty and what is not duty by studying the scriptures. So Srila Prabhupada is expecting that we will be reading his books and trying to understand them. Because in the Bhagavatam, in the Gita, you have all the different aspects of knowledge. There's nothing that's not covered. Between the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, you'll find that these books cover all the subject matters that the Shastras deal with. But they only deal with the most essential aspects, what is actually important for the devotee. Right? You want to advance in devotional service? Those aspects that are important, those are learned. Right? Then for our service, then there may be some details that may be of some use. But otherwise, then there's not, most of the details aren't so important. So the Bhagavatam has already extracted the essence of the Vedic literatures. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita is then the example of those, the lifestyle and the activities of those who accept, who live the teachings of the Bhagavatam. And the Nectar of Devotion then is a portion of those instructions. Right? It's a portion of the instructions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. They're delineating very clearly the process of devotional service. So all the different aspects are there. If one knows all the different Vedic subjects, one will understand that all the subjects are contained in Bhagavatam, Gita, Nectar, Devotion, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. One will not have doubt. One doesn't know the Vedic literatures, one will say, well, this is not there, that is not there, because one thinks a detail is a principle. So that is our problem, not the problem of the Shastras. So Vyasadeva, he wrote all the Vedic literatures. He wrote everything. Means all the major Shruti and Smriti, he has compiled. So he knows what's there and what's not there. And so in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, he says, anything from the Vedic literatures that has to do with karma, jnana, and yoga, right? Those aspects of dharma, artha, karma, moksha, all these things, that is thrown out. And here we just give the pure essence, because every subject matter has its root in Krishna, right? Everything has its root in Krishna. But now, there's certain aspects of the study that are details that are more connected with the material world, that have application to particular time and place. But as you rise up higher and higher in the understandings, the principles, and the conclusions of a particular subject matter, then we see we rise to the level of the conclusions given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So this is very important. So an educated person means someone with enough samskara, enough devotional sukriti, then they will understand this. Is it that one in the Kali Yuga, those who are intelligent will take up the Sankirtan mission? Yajanti, he sumedasa. So who has some medas, who has some brains, they will take up the Sankirtan mission. So the Sankirtan mission means viewing the material world, viewing all activities through the Shastras, which means through the Bhagavatam. Through the Bhagavatam, you look at all of the scriptures, all activities, all dharma, all artha, all kama, all moksha. And with that vision, you will only see Krishna. Right? Because artha means dharma means doing service for Krishna. Making all your activities in relationship to Krishna. Whether it be business, or art, or management, or, you know, varieties of teaching, or whatever you may be doing. But it's done with the goal of pleasing Krishna. That is dharma. Anything other than that is adharma. That's what the Bhagavatam says. We kick out all other cheating religion. Means you do it just because you're supposed to. It's good. It's nice. It's proper. Oh, you're pious. All that's kicked out. So all karma is kicked out. Right? Then artha. Then gain. What is gain? Gain means that we gain Krishna consciousness, we gain the association of devotees, we gain devotional service. That is gain. And then whatever wealth Krishna wants to send, we have that, we use it in Krishna's service. Kama, we engage the senses in Krishna's service. Rishikesha, Krishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchite. Our senses are engaged in the Lord's service. Senses are there, but they're engaged in Krishna's service. And moksha. Moksha means that we are engaged in devotional service. That is real moksha. Anything else is not moksha. So we can see that all the platforms of material existence, everything is engaged in Krishna's service. So all material activities are kicked out. Right? So we see whatever the activity there is, whatever the scriptures relate, but through this vision we see Krishna. Then everything is connected to Krishna. So this is the perfection. So this is the real educated man. He sees all activities in relationship to Bhagavatam. He knows all answers are in the Bhagavatam. Right? There may be some, you know, technical detail, but that's the small thing. That's the small thing. Right? That's not the big thing. Just to give a simple example, you have a business. Right? So now, the businessman, he knows the principles of business. How to buy for cheap and how to sell for more expensive. In that, there's so many little details or arts. Your marketing, you know, the different organizations, your different selling, advertisements, that. But we see the businessman can hire other people to do all of that. He'll have salesmen, he'll have, you know, his supervisors, he'll have people he hires for advertisements, he'll have people that he hires for doing all the marketing and checking and this and that. All these are just hired. But you take any one of those persons and try to run the business, they can't run it. Because they only know their detail. But the businessman, he may not get into all those details. He just knows what works because he understands the principle. Therefore the business flourishes. like that. So this means he knows the principles. He organizes the details in relationship to the principles. And he makes a flourishing business. So now, the accountant may say, well, unless you know all the accounts, then nothing will go on. Or the salesman, well, unless you know the technique of sales, then the business won't go on. And so many people say, well, if you didn't advertise, it wouldn't go on. But the whole point is if you only have advertisement, you don't have any product, or you don't have any marketing, in other words, the whole thing together. And then you may have all the elements. You have the advertisement, you have the sellers, you have everything. But if you don't know how to put it together in the right way, you still don't have business. Therefore, unless you have the conclusions of Bhagavatam, you may have all the details of Sanskrit, astrology, deity worship, all the Puranas, the Upapuranas, the Upavedas. You may have the Dharma Shastras, the Nyaya, everything like this. But if you don't know the conclusions of the Bhagavatam, you have nothing. And anyone who's convinced in this can go back to Godhead, and anyone who doesn't can stay here for a long time. Doesn't matter how scholarly, how much you know, what detail you know, if you do not know the conclusions of Bhagavatam, factually you know nothing. One may say, this is very strong, how you can say that? But it's just like when Prabhupada, just like somebody asked Prabhupada, if you know Krishna, you know everything. So then they ask him, okay, so since you know everything, how many windows on the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada just looked at the person who thought the Hayabhasa question. Now the Swamiji will not be able to answer. And then Prabhupada looked at the person and said, how many windows in a mirage? And then the guy could say nothing. Because it's all illusion. Sanskrit, if it's not connected to Krishna, is illusion. Astrology, astronomy, if it's not connected to Krishna, it is illusion. The deity, all the rituals and all these different things that you may have, your samskaras, all these different things, your mantras, your tantras, your puranadis, if they're not connected to Krishna, they're all illusion. The histories, the details of the histories, all the arts, all the musicology and the drama, all the drama and all the fighting arts and all your, your architecture and engineering and city planning. All these things, if they're not connected to Krishna, and your Ayurveda, your medicine, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's all illusion. All your dharma, all your regulations of scriptures and society and that, if they're not connected to Krishna, they're illusion. And all your logic and argument, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's illusion. Right? Even the greatest of logicians, Shankaracharya said this. What's that? Bhajagovinda Mudamate. You know the second verse? Huh? Oh. So the second verse he says is all your word juggly. If you don't bring it to the point of worship of Govinda, then you're a fool. Mudhamate. You're an ass. You're a donkey. No use. So this is the point. This is why anything other than pure transcendental knowledge is called apara vidya. Apara means it's material knowledge, but it's engaged in Krishna's service. So Srimad Bhagavatam has taken the conclusions out of every sphere of knowledge and has given it very, very nicely in its pure form so that one can very easily take that essence and go back to Godhead. Very enthusiastic. So we have to be convinced of this. if we are, then we can continue to advance very, very nicely. And if we're not, then we can become bewildered. You know? Like that, we can become bewildered. Ants have an interesting thing. Wherever you flick them from, they'll come back to the exact same spot. You know? They're not that intelligent. But here comes more. So, if we understand this, then we'll be very, very satisfied in reading and studying from the books that Srila Prabhupada gives us. Because the conclusions of everything are there. Means if in your daily life, whatever you're doing, you have to be able to connect it back to Krishna. And the principles that work in anything, they all connect back to Krishna. Means there's fundamental principles that make the material world work. You know? And so this all comes back to Krishna. See, here he is. Same spot where I flipped him off of. It's amazing. They always come right back to the same. Oh, okay. Okay, so this is important, because there's been many in the past who have taken up the study of the Aparavidya, or of these other Vedic paths of knowledge, or even the material, even not even as elevated as the Vedic literature. It's just, you know, modern practical knowledge. But unless they've connected it very nicely to the principles given in devotional service, like you may take the knowledge and just engage it in Krishna's service without actually connecting it. You just use it. So then that's okay. But that's the first step. The next step is to understand the principles that make that material knowledge work. Why does it work? Because it's coming close to the Vedic standard. That's why. Right? The Vedic standard works perfectly if you run it properly. So the materialist may, by observation, understand, I do it this way, it doesn't work, I do it this way, it works. So they don't know that reason it works because it's close to the Vedic standard. Right? Just like people have been into sense gratification, this, that. So then they come up with the idea, nobody's satisfied. Then they think, well, if everybody would just be a little more caring, a little more nice to each other, a little bit, you know, considerate of others, then the whole society would develop nicer, right? So they took the path of just gross, sinful sense gratification and went down that very happily, turning their back on religious principles. And then when they got no satisfaction, then they turn around and say, oh, we should be nice. But, so they get a little satisfaction. But why? Because in the Vedic literatures, the whole thing is built on shelter. Shelter means trying to take care of others, helping others. Giving shelter, taking shelter. Right? But because they maintain the platform of sense gratification for my senses, just that I try to do it in such a way I don't exploit others, then there's still no satisfaction. Until they regulate the senses, then they'll get a step closer. But we see that's what the scriptures do. Krishna says here, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may be gradually elevated. Alright. Does this make some sense? This is very important. So the Pancharatra is trying to explain to us. That's what it mentions here. Rupa Goswami, Shruti Smriti Puranadi. So Bhagavatam is written in the form of Purana. You know? And the Pancharatra. Pancharatra Vinim Vina. Vidhim Vina. So Pancharatra. They're all to give you that same idea. The Pancharatra is going to say the same thing that the Puranas, the Smriti, and the Shruti say. There's not going to be difference. Just the approach will be different. One is telling it in this kind of story, you know, in some various devotional or social contexts. You know, the Pancharatra is giving it in relationship to the deity worship. You know, the Shruti will be in relationship to the Vedic, all the different activities around the universe. The Smritis will be like trying to take the essence out of the Shrutis. Like this. So it's all, they're all giving the same thing, just different angles. They have the same principle. Right? Depending upon who the audience is and its application. So then here it says, Krishna Kshetra then continues here. By studying Shastra, we develop our spiritual eyesight. The Hari Bhakti Vilas compares the Shruti and Smriti to the two eyes of a Vipra, or learned Brahman. If we are ignorant of one or both of these, we are blind in one or both eyes. By studying Shastra, we develop the spiritual intelligence to judge and act properly in all situations, according to what is favorable for devotional service. At the same time, we avoid the pitfalls of niyamagraha, following rules and regulations superficially, without understanding their purpose, or neglecting rules and regulations that should be followed, thinking them troublesome. So this is very important. By studying, you develop what Prabhupada always calls shastra chakshus. So here is the scriptures, the Shruti and the Smriti are the two eyes of the Brahman. So through these he sees. Through these he understands. So hearing from Shastra. Hearing Shastra, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, is one of the five principal activities of sadhana bhakti recommended by Lord Chaitanya. Thus every devotee must do this regularly and submissively. Hearing must be done with full concentration and attention, with an active interest in understanding and relishing the message of Shastra. To this end, you may put submissive questions to the speaker when invited to do so, as Śrīla Prabhupāda writes. Those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but this should not be done in a challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. So we see the Bhagavatam 115 purport. So we can see that the Vedic literature, then the demands are on both sides. Nowadays we always talk about the leader. Those who are leading are not leading nicely, or there's some defect, they're not caring enough, they're not. But here it also mentions that those others, they must also have the proper attitude. Otherwise, there's not going to be a good situation. Both have to be there. One must have both. Then it works very nicely. Is that those who can lead, those who can follow, then it becomes perfect. Otherwise, you have the best leader. If there's no one to follow, then they can do nothing. So you have to have both. Right? And so many good followers without a good leader will not make progress very quickly. So like this, both aspects have to be there. So here, then in the scriptures, is that when somebody is speaking on the scriptures, on the Bhagavatam, then if we have something, some doubt or something that's not clear, we ask questions to clear that. It means we have a doubt. So then, if we want to learn something, then we want to have that doubt cleared. Right? So then the person said something, then we ask a question so that they will clear that doubt. Or it will lead to another point which makes it more clear, or then we can ask other questions. You know, it opens up the discussion. But it's not that, well, I think like this, therefore that is correct. And if someone says something different than that, then I will oppose. Otherwise, then what happens is this, there's not proper discussion. That's not Shastra Seva. That's I got my opinion, you have your opinion. No, but it's a matter of discussion and then trying to gain what it is, how that one has come to that conclusion. I have my conclusion. Maybe I made, maybe I didn't see all different things. Or maybe the other person didn't see all things. But by that discussion, by asking nicely, then the speaker also can find if there's something that needs to be adjusted, they can adjust. Because it's not a challenge. They have made their point. And if their point may have some weakness to it, if someone else can very nicely bring that out, then they will also gain. Right? So both become perfect by the process. When dealing with the shastras, then the Shravanam and the Kirtanam both become perfect. Sukadev Goswami is becoming perfect. He became perfect by speaking the Bhagavatam. And Pratikit Maharaj became perfect by hearing the Bhagavatam. Because while you speak, so many realizations are there. And while you listen, so many realizations are there. So both are learning. But someone is sitting in the seat and speaking, and that must be respected. Right? And the proper etiquette must be there. Otherwise, if we're not willing to follow this etiquette, why will anyone follow any other etiquette with us? Right? One cannot pick and choose. We cannot pick that I will jump off the 5-story building. You know, it's a good breeze. It's a quick way to get down to the bottom. You know, so many reasons I may have. But I decide to reject that I'm going to hit the ground and break my head. Oh, I don't accept that part. You cannot accept, but, you know, within a few seconds there will be a rude awakening to the real facts of the material world. So you may not regard others, but then don't expect that Krishna is going to arrange that anybody regards us. That is important. So this is part of the culture, is that we ourselves should try to develop this, to put questions, to hear, to get more clear answer, try to understand how that conclusion was obtained. Someone gives some conclusion. How did they get to that? If you understand, or it's very clear, nice. If it's not, then you ask a question to understand what was the method that they got to that. Then we ourselves will know, oh, this is how. Now I understand. You can understand what was the origin of that. Like this. Reciting Shastra. So Krishna Kshetra continues here. One should regularly engage in deity worship. One who is regularly engaged in deity worship should take advantage of opportunities to recite the Shastras and give lectures on them to the assembled Vaishnavas. Especially initiated Brahmins should know the Shastras and be able to impart their knowledge in an enlivening way. Devotees should also learn to properly pronounce the Sanskrit verses they are chanting. Srila Prabhupada corrected devotees' Sanskrit pronunciation on several occasions. I think Shatadanya Prabhu was mentioning when he was in Japan. What years that would have been? I'm not sure the years. Maybe in 74, 75, or 76, like that. He was in Japan and when Prabhupada was there. And Prabhupada taught chanting in the verses. You know, how to chant. He would chant them and the devotees would recite and that, and then he would have them every day and see who would chant and then compliment them on who was chanting nicely and others, you know, point out where it was. So Prabhupada wanted the devotees to be able to chant nicely, to be able to say, properly pronounce the Sanskrit. So one should endeavor to do that properly. Preaching the message of Shastra. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is a preaching mission, and as such, all members of the society are obliged to participate directly in preaching, particularly by distributing the books to the society's founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada. This is an essential aspect of Shastra Seva, because it gives conditioned souls the opportunity to hear the message of Shastra, ultimately bringing them to the point of surrendering to the Lord and serving Him. We must keep in mind that preaching on the basis of Shastra will only be as effective as our own example in living according to the Shastra. With sadachar, proper behavior, one can offer upachar, items of worship to the Lord, and with sadachar, one can engage in prachar, preaching, to inspire others to take up sadhachar and devotional service. There's also other aspects. Vichar means discussion or understanding the intricacies or what is improper. You know, what you shouldn't do. What is the right way of doing? That's also in the discussions. And then with prachar, there's the preaching. And then as one preaches and matures in that, then you develop the compassion or udhar that you can help uplift other people. So they're all connected. You see all this. Sadachar, Upachar, Prachar, Udar, Vichar, they're all connected together. Like that. So this is all based around hearing the Shastras, studying the Shastras, living the Shastras, giving these to others. So this is the meaning of Swadhyaya. Understand, study, understand, live, give it to others. That is the meaning. Okay, so are there any questions on this Shastra Seva? Oh, question, if one finishes these four books that you mentioned, the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, then can one read other books? Yes, of course. I mean, one, Prabhupada's written so many books, then there's books by the previous acharyas. So many nice books are there. But the essential point is one must approach those books through the viewpoint of the Bhagavatam and through the medium of one's acharya. One cannot jump. Means I've seen in the past where devotees have compared, you know, like what Srila Prabhupada says and what Jiva Goswami says, and then tries to make some thing. Well, Jiva says this, Prabhupada says that, tries to point out some difference. So then the problem comes is then this means that one is approaching Jiva not through the spiritual master. So it means one cannot understand Jiva, because this is Rupa's instructions. Rupa's instructions is one approaches the previous acharya through one's own acharya. It's very important. So, in other words, the reason you see a difference is because you're not qualified to approach the previous acharya, because the approach is wrong. Right? If you see a difference between what Jiva says and what Prabhupada says, means you're not actually seeing what Jiva says, because Prabhupada will say what Jiva is saying. He may apply it to you in a language you understand, instead of saying it in all fancy Sanskrit terminology with all logic and argument. He's saying it in a language we can understand. So then we may mistake, but he's saying it in that language. So you need to know the language, you have to know the situation, you have to know the philosophy that well, and you have to have the right mood. Then one can approach. Right? Just like Jiva will say, he had many disciples who were not very qualified, and they could not understand Parakiya Rasa. Just to them, it just seemed immoral and improper, and how can God do this? He's supposed to set example. He says in the Gita that if he doesn't follow the rules, then everybody else will be put to ruin, this, that, so many things. So Jiva says, no, they're married, eternally married. Just for pastime, it looks like Parakiya. But in tattva, then Krishna and his internal potency, what's the meaning? And then he also pointed out, even in Leela, Brahma marries them. There's another time Lalita marries them. Like this. So then they were very happy. So he just switched them from rasa into tattva. So Prabhupada understands that. And he pointed out that this is what he was doing. So, you know, so then one knows what he's saying. So even though he may be talking about the Swakya, he's actually talking Parakya. Because even that's there, when one goes into the spiritual realm, into the Vrindavan, and one is covered by the Yoga Maya, one forgets all about that. Arjuna made that point, is that when he saw the universal form, then he's standing there and saying, you know, so many times, you know, we're sitting on the same bed and joking and laughing and you know, and he's dealing like he's actually senior, superior, because they're cousins, so they have some fun, you know, like that, because Arjuna is from a more aristocratic lineage, you know, means the Kurus are the main line, and the Yadus are the branch that he was in is like a sub branch of that family. You know, they're under their protection. They're vassals. That means that they're kings, but they pay homage to the emperors. So Arjuna's line is the emperors, and Krishna's line they are the, you know, second, third ring, whatever rung of kings. So he also used to play that, you know, he's from the bigger. Same time as, you know, but so he just forgets that he's God. And that makes for the rasa. So even though they may know that, like the gopis know that Krishna is Lord Ramachandra. You know, they know that. It's not that they're ignorant of these things. But they don't care. When Krishna is behaving in certain ways and all this, they say, we know you. You don't know how to behave nicely. You know, Suparnika came to you, you know, wanted your shelter, and then, you know, you cut off her nose and ears and all that. And, you know, they say all these things. So they just, quick, you know, it's Krishna. Krishna's doing these pastimes as Ram, this, that. They know it's the same person. No, he's God, but who cares? Right? That's all. Right. The mother doesn't care what you're doing. You may be, you know, prime minister, president, you may be, you know, lord of the universe. But when you come in front of her, then she's going to ask you, you know, why you're not keeping yourself warm enough, and you're not getting enough rest, and you're spending too much time working, and why don't you slow down a bit, and are you watching your diet, and do you wear your socks, and do you do all these things, and you're brushing your teeth nicely. She's going to see, you know, she knows you're the prime minister, but she doesn't care about that. She just cares that, you know, you're properly eating and resting properly, and, you know, not doing too much work, and you understand? Because of affection. So it even goes on here in the material world. So let alone the spiritual realm, when there's real affection. So the whole point is they know that. They know all the tattva. They know all that stuff. Otherwise, how are they coming here and speaking it all? They're the ones that are coming here and preaching. All the acharyas. They know it. They know it. And what are they talking about? Like in the Brahma Samhita, you have... I don't know if any of you have seen the original printing. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's printing. So you have the Sanskrit verse, the original verse. Then you have English translation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary. And then Jiva Goswami's commentary in Sanskrit. It's untranslated. So he's so much of the time just talking about Durga and this and that and, you know, fine cutting hairs on the tattvas and this and that, you know. So they know all this stuff. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to convince Mother Yashoda that she should serve Krishna. You don't have to convince the cowherd boys or the calves or the birds or the grass or the trees or that they have to serve Krishna, that they're you know, eternal servants of Krishna, part and parcel. They've gone beyond that. They've accepted that, and they just want to serve Krishna. So one may have that knowledge, but one doesn't need to exercise it. So it just forgets about those things. One is just absorbed in one's relationship with Krishna. But if they come to the material world to preach, then that's what you need here. Because people think they're their bodies and all this, and because of that, they can't understand their relationship with Krishna. Until you pull the anchor out of the water, the boat will not move forward. Can't move forward. Like that. So the whole point is they cut with all this knowledge to destroy the doubts, to destroy the misgivings, so that one can then take advantage of the positive. Right? I mean, the acharyas are reading, you know, from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the stories of Krishna, and they're in total ecstasy. We're reading the Krishna book, and it's nice, but we're not rolling on the ground and crying tears of ecstasy and being overwhelmed with, you know, separation and all that. But somehow or another, it's enough for the acharyas. They're becoming overwhelmed here. Right? But we're not. Why? Because of the anartas. So those anartas are cut with knowledge and service. Knowledge, service, and devotion. These things are cut. Right? Krishna says, armed with the sword of knowledge, then you fight this enemy, lust. Right? So this is the importance. One must be able to understand this. Then one can approach these other literatures. Right? But if one can't do that, then better one doesn't bother, because you're just wasting your time and wasting the acharya's time. You read their book, but it's no service to them because you don't understand it. Because you're not approaching through the proper method. Does that make some sense? So like that. Means if you read the others and you understand what is meant for us and what is meant for other people, and how what's being said supports the conclusions of the Bhagavatam, then you can read. If you just think it's something new and different, then we're not understanding. Like that. Right? Because, there's a thing called ruchi, taste. And there's two kinds of ruchi. One is very advanced. Means if it has the taste, if it's something to do with Krishna, you like it. Example is given by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur of like a kirtan. Someone is singing a kirtan, maybe out of key, maybe it's not in the best tune, you know, maybe the person doesn't have a great voice, but because it's Krishna's name, then you like it. While another devotee, they'll only like the kirtan if the person has a very good voice, is singing in proper tunes and proper ways for the proper time of the day and the proper association and everything like that. Then you find, oh. So that's a lower level. Still it's taste. One should not underestimate. But it's not considered as high as the one where you just see the name. Because the other thing means that you still have conditioned attachments. You like good sound, or good smells, or good this, or good that. And when you come in contact with those, in connection with Krishna, then you're very satisfied. Because it satisfies both spiritually and your material nature. But the other one is you're just attracted by Krishna, no matter how he comes. Like that. It's Krishna, that's all. There's no consideration of one's own taste. Like that. So that is the higher rasa. That's the higher taste, ruchi. So in the same way, if one is only happy with hearing these scriptures, you know, by the previous acharyas, because they use all the technical Sanskrit jargon and present it in certain technical ways and all that, and then, oh, this is so nice. But then we see Prabhupada's books, it's simple English. He translates the Sanskrit into English. We have not as of yet connected what the Sanskrit translations are, so we cannot connect them back. So we just see it as English and simple and all that, and we get no taste. That means we're on a lower level of taste. We may think we have great taste for the Shastra, but we do, but only on that lower level. Because it fits our scholastic nature. We have a scholastic conditioning, and that makes so, so nice taste for us. Right? But we cannot see that when we read Prabhupada's books, that same scholasticism, everything's there. But how expertly he's been able to take that and translate it into English, where he's saying the same thing, but the common man can read it and get some benefit. And the scholar can read it and get that kind of understanding. And the Paramahamsa can read it and get that kind of understanding. Now that is scholasticism. That is very unique. Everybody can read it and everybody gets a realization according to their level of advancement. Well, you see, the acharyas have written it, and if you're already on advanced level, you get some. Otherwise, you may not get much. Because it's not written for... Much of those literatures are not written for Kanishthas. They're written for Madhyams, Uttams. Or they're written for Kanishthas like, you know, defeating Mayavadis and this and that. But it means scholars. So it's either written for scholars or for very advanced devotees. And then some literatures are written for the Madhyams. So one should understand that Prabhupada's expertise is that he could write in such a way that a neophyte can read it and make advancement. Someone who's more advanced can read it and get even deeper meanings. That, because this is the way the Bhagavatam is written. Bhagavan has its direct meaning, its hidden meanings, and its indirect meanings. Like that. Direct is just as talking about a subject there. Indirect, that there's so many subjects that are connected to that. There's a whole path that is going on there that connects one thing to the next. And the hidden meanings is that these other aspects of rasa and all that that we will not understand. The Paramahamsas will read it, they'll get that rasa part. Right? The Madhyams will read it, they'll get the indirect meanings. The Kanishthas will read it, get the direct meanings. So like that. This is the style of the acharyas. Right? So Srila Prabhupada has done that, but now in English. So nicely. So one can read other books, but one has to be very careful to do it according to the recommendation of Rupa Goswami. Then one gets some benefit. Otherwise, better not. Any other questions or points? Okay, the next topic's quite big. It's Prashad Seva, serving and honoring Prashad. Today is what? Tuesday. Okay. Because this in itself is a big topic. Okay. So we'll just kind of deal with the opening of it, and then tomorrow we'll get into the technical details. Otherwise, we go into the technical details today, it'll be very difficult. So here, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, Sri Guru Vastaka, number 4, states, the spiritual master is always offering 4 kinds of delicious food, analyzed as those which are licked, chewed, drunk, and sucked. When the spiritual master sees that the devotees are satisfied by eating Bhagavat Prasad, he is satisfied. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. Many times devotees will always wonder, well, what are these 4 kinds, licked, chewed, drunk, and sucked? So generally if one is used to eating, especially off of a banana leaf plate, and eating, you know, traditional Indian preparations cooked in traditional ways, then they make sense. Now, if you eat everything with a spoon, then it makes it more difficult to understand. So licked means something that is, let's start with chewed, that's easy. Solid stuff, you can pick it up, put it in your mouth, and chew on it. You know, it'll be pieces or it'll be something that's enough that you pick it up and it goes easily in the hand. You know, like rice, chapatis. These are, you know, drier sabjis, or the solid bits in the sabjis. This is chew, you know, or you mix that with the rice, and or like that, it becomes more solid. That's chewed. Then licked means it's a little bit more wet than that. Let's say like sweet rice, right? Sweet rice, if you put it on the plate, you can get it in the hand, and then you have to lick it off the hand, right? Either the front of the hand or the back of your knuckles or something. That's called licked. So it's a little bit more wet, or like a nice sabji that has like a nice gravy to it, like that. That gravy is licked because it'll stay on the plate. It doesn't run. It moves very slowly and it'll stop after a very short, you know, movement. You know, you put it on the plate, it may move just a very short distance from where it's put and stop. So that's the thickness of licked. Right? Then sucked is more thin than that. Like generally like your thinner chutneys and stuff. In other words, it's something that's not water, but it's just above water. So that also you'll only appreciate if you eat it off of a plate. It's like you put something like that on the plate, it'll run across the plate. If you're not a little careful, it may run onto the floor. So you have to, by a very clever way, then move your hand and catch it in your hand, then get it to your mouth before it runs out of your hand, and then you have to suck it, you know, like that. That is called sucked, that consistency. And then drunk means it's more thin. You have it in a glass like that or a bowl, and then you drink it. So it means that all these levels of consistency are there. Solid, semi-solid, semi-liquid, and liquid. It's different things. And all these different preparations fall in these categories. So you have sabjis that fall in all these categories. You have sweets in these categories. You have chutneys. You have all these different things go in these categories. You know? And then the combinations of them. You know? Like you see, you have a samosa. So that'll be chewed, but it's eaten with a chutney that'll be either licked or sucked, right? And they go very well together. You understand? So all these kind of things are there. So this makes it a nice, complete meal. So this is one way to analyze it. Because here it says all kinds of delicious foods. So we talk about the deliciousness of foods, or the taste that we get. We get it because of rasa. Taste comes from rasa. Means if there's no water, there's no taste. The tongue is dry, and we put some dry stone in our mouth. There's no taste. There has to be water for taste. So the reason that things are delicious is because of the liquid in them, or the rasa. Right? Rasa means taste. So depending upon the degree of liquid, then it determines its category in this. So we understand why it's categorized in this way rather than, you know, other ways are, you know, salty, bitter, sour, pungent, astringent, sweet, like that, you know. Another is according to the type of preparations, you know. But this one is like according to its, you know, methods of eating and how it gives that variety. Okay. So the spiritual master is satisfied when he sees devotees eating Bhagavat Prasad. So this is one of the ornaments of a devotee as he advances. He's happy to see others eat. Right? So those who become happy at seeing others eat, or at least who are in a positive mood of tolerating other people eating, only they should be actually dealing with prasadam, cooking and serving. Anyone can eat. Right? But even then, those who know properly how to eat should be, you know, taken care of very nicely. And those who don't know properly how to eat should be put in another place so they don't disturb everybody. So even eating, there's a science. We'll get to that. So the point is that one of the qualifications of advancement is one takes pleasure at seeing others eat. This is one of the qualities of advancement. So the policy that we generally find where prasad is served by the newest of new persons, you know, and those who cook is the guy who wouldn't go out on sankirtan, you know, like that, then this means a lack of this spiritual understanding. Means we've overlooked this or neglected this aspect, is that only those who are advanced should be cooking and serving prasadam. Others are not qualified because they don't take pleasure in others eating. If you don't take pleasure in others eating, how are you going to serve prasad nicely? How are you going to cook nicely? Right? You won't care. You just slap it together because it's a duty. You have to cook. So you cook something for the devotees, like lunch is popcorn and dal. You know? You did it. You know, no one can say you didn't cook lunch. Right? You did it. But, you know, you didn't really seem to care so much about, you know, the satisfaction of devotees. And besides that, you only cooked 2 out of 4 delicious foodstuffs. You only cooked chewed and, you know, depending upon how thick or thin the dal is, but, you know, drunk or sucked. Right? So you left out licked and, you know, whichever one the dal wasn't. Okay? So therefore, in the Gaudiya culture, we see that there's such a importance put on honoring of prasad. We see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's full of stories of taking prasadam. Constantly, the Lord is eating at different devotees' houses, and it just says, the Lord did his noon ablutions, or he went and took his bath in the sea. It didn't say he went down, offered his obeisance to the sea, took some water, sprinkled it on his head, offered some prayers, went in first with his right foot, went in up to his waist, you know, then dipped his head into the water, then rubbed himself nicely, dipped himself again like that while thinking of Jagannath, and then offered tarpanas and like that, then came out, then did this, that, dried himself off in this way with his cloth, rinsed it, then dried himself, rinsed it again, put it out to dry, and then like this, then he did his Gayatris. It doesn't get into that. Chaitanya Charitamrita is written for the Paramahamsas. They've been doing that for, you know, since they were little kids. So everybody know what noon ablutions are, right? But that's what's going on. So it's not written for learning the rules and regulations. It's written for learning the taste. But we see when it comes to prasad seva, it's right into the details. What was the preparation? How it was served? What was the conversation when they were discussing that preparation? Because this has some taste. This has some devotional rasa. That's why it's one of the main principles of the Pancharatra, honoring and taking prasad. Otherwise, it would have just said, yes, Lord went to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. He took prasad along with Nityananda Prabhu. They had some pleasant conversations and all that. And then afterwards, then the Lord was, you know, washed his hands and, you know, cleaned himself after honoring prasad, Jagannath prasad, and then he rested in the house there and, you know, that would have got into something else. But no, it gets right into the conversations and what Nityananda said and what, you know, Advaitacharya said and what Lord Chaitanya said and even got into how, like Advaitacharya, how he cooked, how his wife helped him, how when they finished cooking, the kitchen was totally clean. When they finished the last preparation, the kitchen was already clean. They weren't sitting there looking, staring at a mountain of dirty pots. As they washed it, you put this on the pile, you know, you use this knife to cut this, you wash the knife, knife's clean, you know. You use this spoon for doing this thing, now you're finished with it, you wash it, finished, clean. The last preparation, the pot came off, it's washed immediately, the next pot goes on. So that's a very important principle of cooking. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami found it important enough to put in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And up to now, I've never heard anyone complain that, you know, why has he put this point in here? You know, and as we notice, Advaita Acharya cooked himself. So it wasn't just, you know, he just told his wife to get the maidservants, you know, the ladies, the hired ladies from outside to come and, you know, cook, rustle up some rice and spinach for Lord Chaitanya. He did it himself personally. So this is what creates the atmosphere. Lord Chaitanya, after Haridas Thakur's disappearance, he himself personally wanted to serve the prasadam. Personally. But because of his ecstasy of distributing prasad and seeing the devotees eating prasadam, he was serving enough for 5 people on 1 plate. So then Srup Damodar told him, you sit down. Because Paramananda Puri, Brahmananda Bharata, they're not going to take prasad until you sit. So therefore, we don't want to keep them waiting. You sit down. Right? It was just a trick to get Lord Chaitanya to sit. One, because they wanted him to eat. And two, because no one could take enough for 5 people. Only he could do that. So he sat down, and then it says very expertly, and in a very organized way, then the devotees served the prasad. And they saw that everyone got, and they knew, you know, those who are leading serve, they know who likes what, and this and that, and then make sure that they got more of those, and this and everybody was satisfied. It gets into that much detail. Right? Tells how they brought the pots on their head. You know, they didn't just throw them in a rickshaw and drag them over there or something like that, or, you know, or just get some hired coolie to do it. No, they carried it on their own head, because it's prasad, it's Jagannath. So if you look at these things, these are the culture. And if we look at ourselves, we find we don't follow these things. And then we complain there's no taste. Devotees just come in, dum-dum, take some prasad like that, eat as quickly as possible because it's all maya, and then rush off. You know? And then they wonder, how come there's no sadhu sangha? No one talks to anybody. No one deals with anybody. Because we don't follow the example given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The devotees sit down, they have pleasant conversations, they may discuss, you know, philosophy if it's light. No issues, no heavy things. They like to serve prasad, right? You notice, there's always somebody serving prasad. You don't see one time in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya goes to someone's house and they find that there's a smorgasbord. Right? Did I pronounce it right?
What is it?
Smorgasbord. I think it's a Swedish thing. It means you take all the preparations and you put them in pots, right? And you put a spoon in each pot, and then everybody comes by with their plate. Huh? Yeah, self-service. Huh? Buffet. Yeah, buffet or whatever. Yeah, buffet for boof heads. Right? As you come by, did I pronounce the boof heads right? Huh? No, buffet, but for boof heads. At least some of the Aussies used to say that. Yeah, huh? Buffet. Okay, sorry. said it was a long ooh, it should have been a short. Buffet. Got to get it right, you know. So you just come and Lord Chaitanya, it's just self-service, and he just goes there and takes what he wants and this and that, and, you know, and everybody stood around with their plate in their hand and they're talking to each other about, you know, something and like that. No, you see that they were served, and they were served by senior persons. So this is the culture, right? This used to be the when I joined, that was the culture. You know. So this is what goes on. So if we want to be satisfied, we follow the culture. Otherwise, we shouldn't complain. There's no culture. But at the same time, not follow the culture we were already given. Culture's been given to us. It's there. We don't follow it. Then we complain. Oh, no interaction with devotees, no this, no that. Right? No love and care. Right? Dharati prati bhunkte bojayate. One of 6 ways of interrelating with devotees. So we drop off 1/3 of it. Right? Then Guhyam akiti prichati means we sit around and argue issues, you know. And then what's that?
Didati Prati Grinati.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't still see a whole lot of charity going on these days. And if somebody does give charity to someone else, then hey, why he has? You know? Grihastha should have all the money. Why he's got the money? The Grihastha gave it to him. No, but why he has? You know, it's business. You know, you hear, yeah, like that. It's like, it's crazy. So, even following the tradition that Rupa Goswami says of the loving exchanges between devotees is not appreciated or tolerated. And then at the same time we say, we have to have some culture, some way to relate. You know? So, it's not logical. It's not logical. It cannot be supported by logic, because it isn't. We take the wonderful Gaudiya Vaishnav culture that's been given to us, reject that, and then try to dream up a new culture that's going to satisfy us. Right? So then, you know, instead of reading Chaitanya Charitamrita for getting cultural inspiration, you know, we should read, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or something, you know. You know, nice, what is it? You know, I mean, they were all nice. They found this girl in the forest and they took care not to exploit her or anything like that. And then Prince Charming came along and kissed her and then she came back to life and everyone lived happily ever after. You know, I mean, like that, there's so many stories. So we can take our cultural inspiration from there. Of course, it may not be overly enlivened with what they served for edibles, you know. Or you can take the, what do you call it? Through the looking glass, right? You have the Mad Hatter and the tea party and all that. And when their cup got dirty, they just moved to the next cup over, you know. That's how you get a new cup, as you move to the next seat over. Like that. You know, so I'm saying in these ways you can learn some, you know, get some inspiration or something to get some ideas for creating a new world order. But the whole point is it's already been given to us by the acharyas. Now it's a matter of understanding it and trying to apply it. Right? Simple. Very simple. Right? You would find in the temple, if instead of the new bhaktas coming along, serving at the prasad almost once, and then sitting down, and then nobody else can get anything more, and they got, if they want it, then they got to wait till the next person walks in, and then immediately, hey, give me this, and then he serves that out as quick as he can, and then sits down as soon as he can, as soon as no one asks him for something, and then you wait for the next guy to walk in, and then, you know, go through the whole thing again. So if those who are mature and understood how to satisfy devotees serve prasadam, the whole atmosphere in the temple would immediately go up. And if the atmosphere goes up, problems go down. It may sound simplistic, but let us see anyone come forward with another idea. It's an open challenge. Anyone come forward with another idea other than following the very simple, straightforward culture given to us by the acharyas. What is the alternative? Like that. Because it's not working for the karmis, any alternative, it won't work for us. It's that simple. And we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a simple thing. Senior devotees serve prasad, and it changes the whole atmosphere. Right? We've been serving with new bhaktas for years, and it creates a lousy atmosphere. Right? For years. And so you adjust that. But that means the problem is we want a solution without any surrender, without any commitment, without any authority. Therefore, we want to leave the Vedic culture. Leave the Gaudiya Vaishnav culture. Because it means surrender. It means that I, as a senior devotee, have to serve prasad. I can't just sit behind my computer and be the big man. When it comes time for prasad, I got to go downstairs and serve all the new bhaktas and everybody else in the Mataji's prasad. So we don't want that. We got bigger, more important service, like sitting behind a computer on the email. And then in this way, we have no communication with the devotees. There's no opportunity for that. There's no interaction between the devotees. And then what are we doing on the email? Trying to work out all the problems in our temple because there's no interaction with the devotees. Like that. So it's a very simple thing. This is just one thing here. You know? That's just one aspect. There's so many aspects. Just in prasad, we're just talking this one thing. So we have to be very, very careful of these things to understand that when the scriptures tell us this, they mean it. And Lord Chaitanya set example himself. Srila Prabhupada set example himself. Prabhupada used to serve prasad when devotees didn't know beans about what prasadam was, how to serve it. They could, only thing they could figure out is to get it from the plate into their mouth. You know? And then he taught his leading men how to cook. Right? Kirtananda was the first devotee there. He was the first one to learn. He didn't teach the new guys. He was teaching him. And then the leading men, they were serving prasad. Right? So now we may say, okay, well then it goes like that. But then when you have a temple, okay, then instead of Prabhupada serving, then those men were serving. Then the natural thing is they become more senior, then the next one down till it gets to the new bhaktas. So it's a natural logic world. But the point is it's out of respect for certain persons. They may be more senior, or most senior in the assembly, they may be sat. But the next down from them, they do the serving. Like we see, Srub Damodar, you know, was basically, after Lord Chaitanya, is most leading. He's his secretary. But he's telling Lord Chaitanya, so Lord Chaitanya is sitting. Brahmananda Bharati is sitting. Paramananda Puri is sitting. Like that is sitting. And then your general devotees are sitting. And then leading devotees, they are serving the prasad. Srub Damodar is serving, I think, Mukunda Datta, and all, huh? Jagannanda Pandit, Kashi Mishra, who? Gopinath Acharya. Gopinath Acharya just happens to be Purnamasi. So here you have the you know, who's orchestrating the whole scene, is not sitting back, but is out there serving prasad. Right? So this is there. Is that maybe your top rung is not serving prasad? They may. You know, as long as they don't put enough for five people to eat on each plate, then you can allow them to serve. But if they start in ecstasy, putting enough for five people to eat on one plate, then best is to ask them to sit down. Right? But the point is then, and then those just below them serve. You know? So that's especially on feast days. You know? Feast days, special occasions, this, that. And then on regular days, still, as much as possible, the senior men should be serving. But they shouldn't be the brand new men who know nothing about prasadam. Traditionally, the minimum standard is those who are second initiated serve prasad. Like that. Best is those who are senior amongst those, but whatever, at least that. And if you don't have enough of those, okay, those who have first, but who are in good standing and deal nicely with devotees and have proper attitude, proper service attitude. You know? That's the standard. Like that. One may also, if it's very, very big in that, you know, take advantage. Those who have a very good service attitude, maybe their guests, others who have, they may also be able to take part, but then they must be up to that mood of enthusiasm and attention and care that they can properly distribute prasad. Not as just they do drive people nuts. Enthusiasm is not enough. You know, I think Prabhupada mentioned, since, you know, there also, besides sincerity, there must be intelligence. You heard something like that? I don't know, I've heard something like that before. So, you know? Okay. So we'll end here, and then we'll continue tomorrow with, you know, we'll get into some details of the prasad seva. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.